Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Well, in the first half, Mark Garagus comes into studio and sheds some light on the George Floyd trial. He shot out of a cannon, so be prepared for that. And speaking of shot out of a cannon, we have the finals of March Madness. Madness coming your way first.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Mark Garagus, with Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and we crown the championship of March Madness Madness. And now, madder about waiters and tipping than those mothers are about drunk driving. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on a choice. We get on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
And Ball Brian.
Maybe white people are the problem.
Awesome Dawson's over there. Mark Garagus is in the studio. We were just doing a little supplementary Reasonable Doubt called...
I came up with the name and I get nothing. Doubt. Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. Isn't that good? Don't you like that?
Perfect.
So I said, Mark, hang out and we should talk a little about the Chauvin trial since you've been following it so closely and nobody's more qualified than you. And
it's always when you say hang out at ACS and I get to see Gina, I thought it was a bait and switch. I thought you'd be in studio, but virtually I'll take you. And Bald, it's always good to see you.
Mark, part of Mark's frustration is he can't really get the straight story from watching the old news networks, the CNNs and the MSNBCs, even ABC, CBS, and then Fox has their version of it. But we're not really getting the version of what's actually going on in the courtroom. So because what we're getting is kind of cheerleaders, essentially, instead of fact finders. And boy, experts, boy. Think about experts. Think about medical experts. Think about
criminal county experts, health experts.
County health experts. Yeah. Think how eroded the title expert has become over the last year or so. So
what are you now?
So we bring in, I said, Mark, hang out and sort of catch us up on what's going on that trial
Let me tell you something, because it's so frustrating to me, having lived through what I call these supersized trials. And it's also frustrating to me because I've got a day job. And the last thing when I'm interested in something that obviously I saw a poll, I was just telling Adam, I saw a poll that somewhere in the neighborhood of 58% of the country are following this closely or somewhat closely. 48% of the country believe he's guilty, Derek Chauvin. But you would like to feel like you're actually getting some accurate information. So I watch CNN, I watch MSNBC, I watch Fox. Fox is busy at the border, and MSNBC and CNN have got people who proclaim themselves to be criminal defense lawyers who sound to me like cheerleaders for the prosecution. Nancy Grace would blush at some of the stuff she hears coming out of the mouths of, I love Gina.
If you ever want to hear Nancy's opinion on this, she has a lot to say. Although, however, I have been focused on this two-year-old who was killed at a nursery day school. I am furious. I am fuming. I'm going to work on that. But as soon as I'm done, I swear swear I will get to this Derek Chauvin trial.
So Adam and I were talking last week. Last week was 1 week of feelings. How do witnesses feel? How do they, you know, what kind of emotions? Are you able to sleep at night? All of which is very cathartic, and I understand the country may need that kind of catharsis. However, it's a criminal trial where you're supposed to prove the elements of the charged offense. And I've yet to feel, nobody has explained to me how a witness's feelings and emotions relate to the criminal elements of the charge of manslaughter or murder. So
they may not, but Mark, does it work on a jury? That's the ultimate question, right?
The ultimate question, I've said this for years, is that people underestimate jurors to this degree. Jurors, when they get those jury instructions, they try mightily to follow the instructions. They try mightily to follow the law. Normally, when somebody takes the oath, they believe in the oath. The problem with a case like this is that jurors are going to fear that, as Mia said, the Black Lives Matter, I just saw a tape where she said, if there's a not guilty, we're going to burn the house down. We're going to burn it down. And jurors are not sequestered, so jurors know that. So you have to really say to yourself, how is a juror, and I've been there, when they removed a foreperson on one of my juries because he didn't want to vote guilty but was afraid that if he didn't vote guilty, he would be basically hung in effigy. How is a juror supposed to weigh the evidence at that point? And by the way, and I've said this and Adam's heard it before, you make bad law with cases like this, and it's going to apply. You're going to have the next prosecutor is going to be prosecuting somebody who may be a loved one of yours, and you're going to say, what the hell happened here? How is this possible? How are we, how is this admissible? And you'll say, well, when we wanted to prosecute somebody we all universally hate, it was okay. But when it's your brother, your sister, your son, then we've got a problem.
Hey, Mark, a quick question, because you know a lot about jury selection and all that, of course. With such a high-profile case, why aren't they sequestered?
It's beyond me. Look, the minute that judge said that I can't send this, the change of venue, meaning I can't send it to a different location because of the publicity, well, okay, I got you. I'm with you. You can't change the venue. However, you can sequester the jury. They did it for Aaron Hernandez in Massachusetts. They did it for Casey Anthony in Florida. The fear, I suppose, is that if you sequester the jury won't be inflamed by what's happening outside. You're making awfully, awfully bad law here. And I'm just going to tell you, it's going to come back to haunt the very people who want and are cheerleading conviction.
I know Chelsea Handler had a tweet that you enjoyed.
Oh, God. Chelsea Handler, by the way, who enjoys vodka as much as I enjoy tequila, and on occasion can be rip-roaringly funny, basically said, dispense with due process. If there's audio or visual evidence, we don't need a trial. That, you know, that was kind of that's a very Stalin-esque viewpoint. Yeah.
So
totalitarian.
Yeah. What you're seeing, and so just a sort of layman's version of all this. So we're in this world where the news outlets become cheerleaders for the prosecution. They only sort of give you the highlights of the prosecution. They're not really offering alternatives that the defense had brought up, for instance. And then, so what we're getting is a version of the trial that does not mirror what's going on inside the courtroom, but the jurors are. And so if the jurors acquit or they lessen the charges, then all the people that have just been watching the cheerleaders version of it go apoplectic and start burning everything down, because how could you acquit this guy? We heard all the damning evidence.
When the defense yesterday, did anybody hear this? When the defense yesterday asked a couple of questions of the police chief, everybody's heard. The police chief said, this isn't policy. This isn't how we train. The defense, Eric Nelson, got up and asked a couple of questions. He said, when was the last time you arrested somebody? Years ago, the chief. Well, by the way, when you're saying this isn't within policy, you're talking about employment decisions, aren't you? Yeah, I'm talking about employment decisions. They're not trying him for the employment decision. He was fired. And probably beyond any doubt, reasonably, justifiably fired. However, the questions that were asked of the chief on cross-examination, which the chief all conceded, haven't been reported anywhere or were buried in one NBC News article towards the second to last paragraph after about 10 paragraphs of pom-pom waving.
Yes. And the other phrase that I've been hearing a lot is the blue wall of silence, which I had never heard. But, oh, everyone's breaking the blue wall of silence. That's been the headline.
Right. And yeah. By the way, I understand that. Having, you know, I will give the mea culpa myself. I have only defended cops intermittently over four decades. I sue cops regularly. A large part of my practice is suing cops. I get that there is a blue wave of silence. However, this is not a civil case. This is a criminal case. In a criminal case, we should have some evidentiary rulings that are related to and based on fact. And for every time I hear somebody saying the defense is trying to put George Floyd on trial, I just want to scream. No, they aren't. They're trying to defend and they're trying to get into causation. Causation is an element of the crime. The defense is actually doing what they're supposed to do because they're trying to negate causation. So when people say, well, they're talking about fentanyl. They're talking about heart disease. They're talking about this or that. That's all irrelevant. No, the feelings are irrelevant of witnesses. What is relevant is what is the cause of death. You can argue over cause of death. You can say that the knee on the neck for 9 minutes was excessive. I get all of that. But the defense would be ineffective as a matter of law if they didn't challenge the causation.
Well, I was watching Jake Tapper, I think, on Sunday morning, he had Ilhan Omar on. I think she said exactly what you just said. So we'll take a look at this clip. I just took it from my TV set.
Really horrendous to watch the defense put George Floyd on trial instead of the police office, the former police officer who's charged with his murder.
Major League.
So the defense should put their client on trial. You've been doing it wrong all these years.
Apparently, I've misread the Constitution. Apparently, the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court for 200 years is wrong. And apparently, the 6068 of the Business Professions Code, I'm not supposed to zealously defend a client. I'm supposed to prosecute my client.
Imagine this dingbat in a position of power. Like, they put George Floyd on trial instead of the police officer. Like, imagine just uttering that into a microphone.
Let me explain something. So for those who don't quite understand, a person is charged with murder. I don't care if you hate him. I don't care if he's the most despicable human that has ever walked the face of the earth. I don't care about any of that. What I care about, if you're defending or prosecuting, you're supposed to find the elements, which means the death of another. It has to be a homicide. The defendant has to have the requisite mental state, what's called a mens rea. So they either have to have malice or something less than malice if it's manslaughter. And there has to be causation. Those are the elements. And he's talking about the elements. He's not putting somebody else on trial.
I know. We've just all lost our
our collective minds. And by the way, you will hopefully someday say, wait a second here, maybe be careful what you wish for. If we can just start talking about people's feelings and convict people based on feelings of criminal charges and deprive them of liberty, we've reached a point in this world where you might barricade a restaurant for doing outdoor dining.
Oh, Tinhorn Flats. Yeah, I want to get into your client's Tinhorn Flats in a second. So summation is, where do you have this trial X amount of days in? How do you...
Look, you can't look at the jurors, which is, I guess, a good thing.
You can't see them on camera.
You can't see them on camera, so you can't see how they're reacting. I will tell you, when I watch C-SPAN, it is breathtaking to me how it's being reported from what I'm watching on C-SPAN when I actually watch the cross-examination by the defense. It's a complete, it's a brave new world. Having said that, there's no way that you're the, in my humble opinion, that you're going to get an acquittal in this case, because these, the jurors who live there are not going to set their town on fire or their state on fire. And as Mia said, it, Black Lives Matter, if there's an acquittal, the country will burn. So nobody's, you're not going to find an acquittal. The best case scenario, and I said it in jury selection, is you hope for a hung jury if you're the defense in this case.
And then they'll retry it?
Yeah, they'll retry it, or the feds will come in and indict him and convict him a lot quicker.
All right, so Tinhorn Flats, they're up the street. We brought them up a few times. Restaurant, been there for 40-some-odd years. I went to high school with the owner of it now. They're famously shut down by Burbank, and then they did their outdoor dining anyway.
They've arrested, mind you, the court order is against the corporation. There's a court order. They went in. They got a temporary restraining order against the corporation. I represent the corporation. I don't represent anybody else. I was deemed to represent the corporation because I went in, made a special appearance to quash service because they had not served Barrett, who you went to high school with.
Yeah.
So the city of Burbank has, in their infinite wisdom, arrested Lucas, the 20-year-old son of Barrett, not once, but twice. Once, while he's on the sidewalk, which was today, he was on the sidewalk moving sandbags, okay, at 9:30 in the morning. Let's go arrest him.
What then, are the sandbags there for?
They've sandbagged so he can't even get to the outdoor patio. I mean, literally, and I'm told, wow. I'm told that they're building a cement wall now to try to block off the location. They've lost their mind.
Small.
They arrested him at 11 o'clock at night at a traffic light the day before yesterday. And I believe in my heart of hearts that a lot of this comes from a guy by the name of
Constantine Anthony,
who really has got a thing for my podcast partner here.
Yeah, he's not a fan.
Well, he's not a fan.
He's the guy who, in this Burbank City Council, who was basically explaining that arresting Rosa Parks was a good thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he's like, well, we did it anyway. Rules are rules. So he's basically saying, even when we're wrong, we still have to arrest people, essentially, like they did with Rosa Parks. People,
and by the way,
as my people say, he was a little famished.
Yeah, he's a little, well, he's more than a little famished. Isn't he self-proclaimed on the spectrum?
Yes, he's on the spectrum. He's formerly homeless, and I made fun of him, and that's a hate crime.
Do we have his tweet?
Yeah, we have it.
Where is it?
Yeah, Ken will put it up.
So they shut the electricity, right. They shut the power.
Yeah, yeah.
So Adam Carolla, he spelled my name. I've had my name misspelled many different ways.
I've never
ways,
seen
never
it.
This
is
way.
A new take.
Adam called me impaired, handicapped, imbecile on his podcast today. And that was after he found out I was autistic. Yeah, I was basing it on your autism, on the spectrum. By the way, sleeping. He's a formerly homeless person who slept outside. Well, good. Now he's making an insane policy in the city of Burbank. Yes. Thank you, Constantine. Now do your fucking job and shut up.
Yeah, by the way, Constantine, if you are somebody who likes to live outside, why are you so opposed to somebody eating outside?
That's a decent point. Yeah. Remember all those glory, those salad days of you camping on the sidewalk?
Exactly. And by the way, there is an exemption under the Corona dictates for being homeless. Now that you've made the clients and the Tinhorn Flats homeless, maybe they get it. They should fall under the exemption.
So they shut the power.
Right. And then they padlocked the doors.
Then they padlocked the doors.
Now
they got generators. So right. Tinhorn Flats went around. Now, I went there with Sonny, you know, some months ago and just ate outdoors on the patio. They have a big patio outside, and it's like any other patio you've eaten at. And never a shred.
They're all generally open.
Right. Now, and not a shred of evidence of any outdoor transmission of the disease.
Oh, by the way, I sent this to Gary last week for Reasonable Doubt. I watched MSNBC, and they had on a woman who's an epidemiologist who met – I forget the host's name, but he's very virulently anti-right. And he asked her a question. He said – what do you think about the right's disinformation campaign about corona? And she had the temerity to say, well, actually, it's kind of across the spectrum, speaking of spectrum, because there really is, after a year, there's no evidence that this has anything to do with outdoor transmission. And you should have seen the guy's face. It was like, oh, my God, you've committed heresy. This is blasphemy that you would ever say that – both sides, the anti-vaxxers and anti-outdoors people, have some kind of symbiotic equivalency.
So now the city of Burbank is sandbagging, literally, or barricading, literally, this place that refuses to go out of business. Oh, so we're just looking at pictures of Tin Horn Flats now.
And, oh, my.
And
freedom now.
Yeah.
My God. If you called the city of Burbank and said, I got a love seat out on the curb in front of me and there's a homeless guy shitting on it, they would hang up on you. It would take them 7 months to send a guy out to write up a report. But if you're Tin Horn Flats, they're fucking Johnny on the spot, right?
Yeah. And by the way, there's been in-home invasions in Burbank in this last couple of weeks. There has been a spike in violent crime, but I'm told that they have deployed undercover detectives to monitor Tin Horn Flats. That's where the deployment of resources, that and barricading the place, is what Burbank's tax dollars are being used. But by the way, they just announced a program for small businesses so you can get grants. So I told Barrett, why don't you apply for one, and then we can pay for the bail money for Lucas. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, they've lost their collective minds. It's like nothing I've ever seen. I can't believe it's happening within 9 minutes of here. You would think this was in a foreign country somewhere, but no, it's right here in the San Gabriel Valley, brought to you by the formerly homeless, on-the-spectrum ruler of Burbank.
Yeah, so San Fernando Valley, I think. Sorry.
So people outside the area, Burbank's its own city, and there's like L.A. and Glendale. There's, it's its own city separate from L.A. Mark, is this happening anywhere else? Why, and if not, why does Burbank have such a hard-on for this seemingly nothing burger?
I will tell you what is astonishing to me. You know, city of Burbank does not have, even though it's a city, they don't have their own health department. So they rely on the L.A. County Health Department. So when I made the I didn't make the argument, Alexandra made the argument to the city council of Burbank that the LA County revocation of the health permit was based on a faulty or legally infirm basis. Basically, that the county had been restrained by a Superior Court judge in another case that I was litigating. The brain surgeon, Constantine Anthony, responded, I don't care what an L.A. County judge says. I don't care what L.A. County or downtown judges are saying. We're going to do it. And then launched into the Rosa Parks, which shows the intellectual bankruptcy and frankly, the intellectual challenge of these people. If you don't care what the L.A. County judge says, then why are you running to an L.A. County judge to get an order in the first place?
Yeah, it's
care sometimes and not others.
Well, there's a bottom line. They made an idiotic rule, and Tin Horn Flats broke their idiotic rule. And something we formerly look, you think about movies. Movies are about the Rosa Parks of the world. They're about the, you know, sort of thing where they, you know, they said to Branch Rickey,
you tobacco, right?
You can't have a black person on your roster. And he said, I'm going to hire Jackie Robinson. You know, all the heroes in terms of mythology, in terms of movies, in terms of storytelling are all the rule breakers. They're not the fucking bureaucrats who enforce these unfair rules. So Tinhorn Flats is basically doing what the movies tell him to do, essentially doing what all the stories in the Bible and all the stories that have ever been told, they are essentially doing that. And I don't think history is going to be kind to this, but we're sitting back and watching this. So basically, they're being punished for defying them. They're not being punished for endangering people. They're being punished for defying them.
Well, and we've also got this kind of perverse judicial abdication. The judges, you know, there's been a couple of judges, Judge Chalfont, for one, in downtown, who originally restrained the county when we went in for a petition, and then the Court of Appeal just stayed it and kind of punted it. We're operating under what I call the COVID Constitution, which means anything goes. An emergency can last for years. It's basically, you know, if you read about this in the Philippines, or if you read about this in the Honduras, you would say, oh my God, what a tin horn type of, get it?
Flat. Yeah. Banana Republic.
Banana Republic.
All right. Last topic, Spirit Airlines. Chris just sent me this. You sent the video, but was it an old story?
This broke yesterday.
Oh, it was another 2-year-old getting thrown off off a plane. By the way, the vectors of transmission, airplane, there's zero on airplanes. No one's really yet to really sufficiently describe the airplane. Now, I know they say they have ventilation systems, but does that explain 150 people packed into a cigar tube? I mean, in a world where you take off from LAX. If you took off from LAX in June, you fly directly over the beach. You fly right over the ocean. You go out into the ocean. They do like a U-turn and head to wherever it is you have to go. If you look down on that beach, someone would be arrested for paddleboarding alone. But inside the fucking airplane you're in, there's 180 people. And yes, they've left a seat open between the two of you and coach, which is 17 inches. I'll explain to you off the air what coach is. Because he thinks I'm talking about a handbag.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are you talking about? Tenny buys a coach.
No, I'll talk to you off the air. I don't want to bore most of our listeners understand the concept of coach. But what sense does this make? And then a 2-year-old needs to have their mask. Why two? And how can you expect a 2-year-old to navigate anything, especially something like a mask?
Well, by the way, can we also talk about the first indications of the spread of the virus in the United States were when people flew over from Wuhan, both into LA and to Atlanta, and CDC did nothing with those people, and they then went into the wind, and it's been documented that the airplane ended up incubating the virus amongst the people on those initial planes about 14 months ago. But one of the reasons that we didn't do anything, because once again, we were not following the science, we were following the lobbyists. We didn't shut that down because at the time the administration was worried about the travel industry and they were worried about airlines, and we paid the price for it.
So now there's this footage. I didn't see it because you sent it to me, and it said this video cannot be watched or something. So I don't know
We can watch a little bit of it here.
But it's a family, and they have a 2-year-old.
2-year-old eating.
Take note of who's not causing the problem.
I looked at this.
How old is your friend?
What did I do?
I told you, non-compliance. We'll have to get off.
I didn't want to do this.
You have to pick up your stuff.
What do we do?
I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. Tell me what we did.
Non-compliance with the mask.
We're wearing a mask.
She's not wearing it.
The baby?
Wearing a mask.
A
little baby
here, you know,
we keep cutting
it on.
Wearing a mask.
A lot of kids
were
wearing a mask.
He was sitting next to me. Was I wearing a mask
all
the time, everybody?
I'm sorry. But the kids want this baby.
I'll make sure he wears it. Everything's going to be fine.
I'm sorry.
I'll make sure that they're wearing it, okay?
My
sibling
is calling it off.
Special needs child and a 2-year-old.
I understand.
Right.
I'm not my choice.
Who's choice? Let's bring him
why
in.
Why would you make
right,
waste time to do this?
I'm sorry, but she has to get up and she has to take her stuff and get her.
Excuse me. I'm not going to leave until I understand what I did wrong.
I have
so if you want to call your manager, you can call your manager.
Mask policy. I need not comply with the mask policy.
You said it's not your, it's not you. So who is this?
We're done talking,
right?
We're done talking,
okay.
But pilot wants you off, you have to get off.
Who wants me off?
Pilot wants you off.
Who?
She's a baby.
Pilot
she's
wants
a baby.
You off.
I fixed my plane.
You have
How
to get
old
off.
Is she?
She's just turned 2 a month ago.
I understand.
It's 5 and up. What is she?
I'm trying to wear it. She keeps
All right, we got
so basically,
they were an hour into the flight?
Well, no. So they ended up having to deboard the entire plane. And then
had they taken off yet?
No.
Okay.
No. So they deboarded, and then a little over an hour later, they reboarded. Everybody was allowed back on, and
except
except for that flight attendant who was demanding they get off. But Spirit Airlines,
wait, flight attendant was not let back on.
Well, that's what the story was. But Spirit Airlines went out and said, "No, we had a crew change. It's not what you think."
Right.
Yeah. So that's
right.
what Spirit.
Why do
a
I
one
have
person
like...
crew change?
By the way, they shouldn't be called Spirit. They should be called Letter. Because that was not the spirit of the law, the 2-year-old taking the fucking mask off to eat some
applesauce. All I could think of as I'm watching that is you've got Constantine over here who's talking about basically he's forgotten what the Nuremberg defense was, which is basically I was just following orders. Then you've got this flight attendant. Is that what I have to call them now?
I guess.
In the old days, I used to say stewardess, and I've been stoned for that. But
you know the hot chick who tops off your Courvoisier when you're on the
on Big Boy?
On Big Boy.
Yeah.
Same role.
I call that anyway.
Yes.
So she's saying,
what do you call it, Mark?
If I had had a 1942 before, I would have named it. The idea that somehow we're just following, didn't she just say, I'm just following the rules? Wasn't that what she said?
Or what the pilot told her.
Yeah, the pilot told me, so I'm just following the rules. There's a certain amount of, at what point, the old John Lewis thing, get in some good trouble. When do people decide that at a certain point it's okay to just say this is absurd?
Well, it's interesting. You talk about John Lewis in good trouble, and he passed away, I guess, about a year ago now. Mm-hmm. That was the whole notion. But he was talking about good trouble in terms of go out and protest with Black Lives Matter. He wasn't talking about a restaurant reopening in defying the rules. He would have condemned that, I'm sure.
I don't know. I mean, I think I like to think that people, maybe it's my naivete, but I like to think that somebody can hold two concepts in their hand. They can say the criminal justice system is irretrievably broken, which by the way, Dawson is here. Awesome Dawson did the audio book 8 years ago when I said that. So you can hold that in your head and say criminal justice system is irretrievably broken. And you can also say to yourself the left has gone off the deep end in terms of the Constitution right now. Why can't both be true?
I think they can. I think they are. Yes, Gina.
Real quick, I'm just going to make some nerds real horny real fast. All I can think about is an episode of Star Trek, Next Generation, that keeps popping into my head over this whole debate, which is they land on this planet. It's perfect. Everybody's happy. Everybody's beautiful. They can't figure out. It's almost very Twilight Zone-esque. Why is everybody so perfect and happy and playing at the park and having the best time? And then they're playing Frisbee or something, and they accidentally, one of them goes to catch the Frisbee, and their toe goes on the grass. And everybody just stops and turns to them. That person's hauled away and you never see them again. And you find out that the reason why everything looks so perfect and everyone's happy is because if you break one little rule, they sentence you to death.
Yeah, they base that on Singapore. They base that on Singapore.
That reminds me.
And that kind of reminds me of the conversation.
Reminds me of an episode of Battlestar Galactica once. Now, bear with me. This is going to take a minute.
Yeah, wait.
All right. Stop nerding out over there, Gina.
But the concept is
wrong. Yes, I get it. And
horny nerds for Gina. It's a new Facebook group.
Here's what I would say about the pilot once the kid thrown off the plane. How does the pilot fucking know that kid is in there with his mask around his neck eating pudding?
You touched on, maybe I'm reading too much into this, but you touched on something that my spidey sense went off, which is Would you say pilot or captain? Do you think the pilot even knew? Do you think she just made that call on her own?
No.
That's something you go that says, do I something's going on back there. Can I throw your name around? Do I have your permission?
Yeah. This is you going maybe to the cockpit and going, I just thought you should know there's somebody who's not in compliance. They probably didn't even say a 2-year-old, you know, whatever. Right. And they went, all right, well then, and they're being combative. Okay. Well then they're getting her.
Right.
Crazy Karen, and I guess black chicks can be Karens too in this evolved society. If that, in fact, because that felt pretty Karen-y for me. You know, it's normally
the Karen rule enforcer,
right?
The twist.
But also it is it's sort of here's the slippery slope we're on. There, and you see it all the time, which is I'm telling you to do something, and then you go. Okay, you know, we'll comply, or this is fine, or just take the plane off, or just let Tinhorn Flats. And it's not an argument over safety. It's an argument over defiance. You're defying me. You're pushing back against this unreasonable. I'm going to tell you to do something unreasonable. You're going to state your case, and now you're defying me, and now everyone's getting off the plane, and now we're getting the sandbags out and blocking right. the doors. You have defied me.
Yeah.
Well, that is a very scary relationship to have with people in power. We should always keep it to the matter at hand, the subject, not whether you have defied. And cops do this all the time. You know, you do that thing where, you tell the cop, I was just going with the flow of, okay, now it's time to get out of the car.
Right.
Like you pushed.
I call that contempt of cop.
You pushed back. We should never. And by the way, it's very tempting for people in power to play the defiance card. You know what I mean? Like, I'm in charge. I mean, they do experiments with monkeys and college kids and stuff like that. Once someone gets a little juice and a baton, then the rules start changing. And again, you should never have that relationship, that defiance relationship. And that's kind of micro and macro what's going on in our society right now. So that's why I would like people to have less power. That's me. All right, let me give you some plugs, Mark. I don't even know where your plug sheet is.
You want my
here.
Plug
we
sheet?
We got Reasonable Doubt.
Right, Reasonable Doubt. And we're doing Beyond Reasonable Doubt, which is that's every good. Tuesday and Thursday we're going to drop extra special episodes. If you're in New York, stop by Prova Pizzeria in Grand Central Terminal and at the Moxie Hotel in Times Square, Engine Company 28 downtown, and 10E Mediterranean Tapas. If you're at Engine Company, say hi to Dr. Alien. If you're at 10E, there's the preacher who we've got a temporary restraining order out against. Then if you're in Palm Springs, go by Gigi's or the Elixir.
I was telling Mark off the air, the reason I knew beyond a reasonable doubt was his idea versus Gary's ideas, because when Mark told me the title of it, he punched me in the arm and started laughing, which means it's his idea.
And not Gary's.
And not Gary's idea. And did I tell you, I told you on Beyond Reasonable Doubt, but did I tell you here an hour ago I was walking through my neighborhood and saw a painter? Did I say that on this show?
Oh, that was the last.
I was funny. He goes, I was walking and there's a guy painting in a van. He was out in his van. He was in the street. He was a real painter. He was wearing white bib coveralls and had a white van and a white T-shirt.
Yes, this was not Van Gogh.
It's weird. I guess the conceit is we only paint white things because every real painter is like white. But what about the brown trim? I mean, is that going to fuck up your coveralls? But anyway, he's standing there and I'm walking past him.
You do the brown trim first, then white. So
then he switches it. Yeah. So then he goes, he holds up his phone and he goes, I'm listening to you right now. I'm listening to the podcast right now. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then he goes, Mark Gargos lives in this neighborhood. And I said, yeah, he does. And he said, he walked past here yesterday and yelled up, what a circus, because he had his guy on the roof hanging off. It was a two-story building, a two-story house, and he was painting the dormer windows at the top with a steep roof, and he took his Guatemalan guy, talk about white privilege, and like tied a rope to him and like hung him off. But Mark decided to comment out loud as he was walking down the street.
You guys are blowing this dude's mind. Who else can I conjure next? Yeah. What podcast should I listen to?
We're taking listeners one at a time.
All right, Mark, you're dismissed. I know you got
Thank
a heart
you.
Out.
I got a heart out. Bye,
Thank
Gina.
You.
Bye, Bob.
Bye.
And we'll see you in Nashville or somewhere.
Yes.
I don't know, but have a good day, and thanks for hanging out. All right. Well, we have March Madness Madness, and we will do that right after this.
Just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. A new month of Adam's Monthly Nut has arrived. April will feature Righteous Felon Beef Jerky with flavors like Shea, Potle, Guevara, and Habanero Escobar. Expand laces, because who doesn't want to turn every shoe into a slip-on? At least sometimes. You'll also get a copy of Daddy Stop Talking and a bottle of your choice. Prep your mailbox, because Adam's Monthly Nut is on its way. And now, a tip from the 1965 issue of Good Housekeeping. 120 ways to please a man.
A good wife is friendly. She smiles easily and she is pleasant to be with. She has many friends whom she entertains within her means, but she's careful to prevent social activities from interfering with her husband's rest, health, and efficiency.
Just one of 120 ways to please a man. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Oh, Max Zapata, you move my bell, man. I can't get to my bell. That's my secret power when it comes to March Madness Madness. So we got waiters and tipping, and then we got, let's see, Gillette, toxic masculinity. So it's Oof. It's down to it now.
Are you up for this?
You know,
are you going to have a stroke?
Well, it's tough because on most of these subjects, I have kind of one angle. It's an here's my angle on tipping or here's my angle on toxic masculinity. As we get deeper into the tournament, we have to come up with multiple angles and, you know, try to limit the redundancy of jokes and ideas. So I found myself having to really try to dig deeper into the nuance or find different weird angles. And look, I will be transparent. We will veer away from the subject at hand to some degree in a simple quest to find new angles.
New material.
Oh. Are we ready, awesome Dawson?
It's time for the conclusion of the collision of criticisms. The ranking of the raging, to find which peeve is sent packing, and which complaint captures the crown. And also, it's time for a lot less alliteration as we wrap up the big rants of March Madness Madness. Yesterday we had our Furious Four to narrow it down to the championship round. In a service industry smackdown, the minimum wage did not get maximum rage and got a snot rocket in their hopes to go all the way by waiters and tipping. And when pop culture conference champion Gillette's toxic masculinity ad faced off against the California conference winner Forest Lawn Flower Guys got razor burned and had to flee the tournament like they fled Central America. Which leaves us with our final round. Two grievances enter, one grievance leaves. Which ire will inspire the best rant? It's Gillette's toxic masculinity ad versus waiters and tipping.
Waiters and tipping. Well, first off, this may be a California thing, but new rule for waiters. When I order my Denver omelet and my hash browns, you then ask me if I need ketchup, Tabasco, salt, or pepper. You ask then if I need it. Do not bring me the fucking hash browns and the Denver omelet and then ask me if I enjoy Tabasco, ketchup, salt, and pepper. By the way, when you order a fucking omelet and hash browns, everyone born wants ketchup and wants pepper and wants Tabasco and wants salt and pepper. They all want that. They all want it. So, because here's what the system we have now. We have a fucking pussy governor shut everything down. We have to eat outside when it's cold. I have to stare at my ketchup-less hash browns and my Tabasco-less Denver omelet and wait and pray you remember to circle around and bring it back while I stare at the food. Inevitably, I cannot contain myself. I dig in, polish it off, and then the fucking ketchup shows up. So ask when I order. Or just assume every human being who gets hash browns wants fucking ketchup with it. Also, memory. What is going on with memory? Look at the diverse memory, the pageantry of memory that goes on with waiters. They come out there and they give you a 20-minute dissertation on the specials. Always committed to memory. 5 pages of here's what the specials are, how the scallops are seared and what part of Nova Scotia they were harvested from, all that. So you have a wonderful memory, right? But then when I ask you for a fucking vodka soda lemon, you bring me a fucking lime and screw the pooch. Well, which is it? Do you have a memory or don't you have a memory? Are you fucking Elon Musk or a goddamn stroke victim? And let me tell you something about work. Actors is work. Oh, I love the fucking actors, because all actors I know in this fucking city, they all worked as waiters. And they have the fucking temerity to look me in the eye, the grizzled eye, of a man who's worked with his hands. And they go, oh, you've never been a waiter. Oh, you don't know how hard it is. You don't know it's so much fucking work. You're on your feet the entire time. Really? You're talking to a guy who crawled under fucking condemned houses and dug a footing with a fucking coffee can, and you had to bring cinnamon toast to a 9-year-old, and you're going to fucking look me in the face and insult me. Oh, it's so much work. Work compared to what? Working in a fucking toll booth, you lazy sack of shit? All right. Now, let's see. All right, that's all I got. I'm out of gas. Oh, it was dumb to figure out whether Dawson cues me up or not.
Gillette's toxic masculinity ad.
All right. Listen. Listen, big corporations. Unfucking woke yourself. I'm so fucking tired of being preached at by these big fucking corporations who just go, all they want to do is fucking make money, but now they want to make you feel a certain way with the puppies and the love and the fucking Subarus. Stop trying to make me fucking feel some way. Make a better fucking product and unfucking wake yourself, would you please? And think about it. This started about 10 years ago with all the good vibes and all this stuff. These are corporations. It's trickled down to small businesses. When you go into a small business, they go, oh, we're going to donate $1 for every fucking used book sold to the Animal Rescue Club. How long before it just gets right down into the private sector? How long before Rick the plumber shows up to your house and explains to you his fucking pronouns and how plumbing makes him feel? Because that's where we're getting to now. We're going to go how the fucking dog walker tells you how they make everything feels. Knock it the fuck off with the touchy feeling. And big corp, stay the fuck out of it. I just read on SI today that they got a dude in the swimwear competition. The swimwear issue has a dude into it. Thanks, Sports Illustrated. And let me tell you this. It's well known that Gillette, you guys make all your shit in either China or Mexico. So don't give me this good vibes. There's fucking ethnic cleansing going on in the places you're setting up business, and the coyotes are running fentanyl in the other place. And a lot of people say, well, ease up, Ace. Maybe they're just making those razors in China and in Mexico for the men who work and live in China and Mexico. Well, it is well known. It is documented that Chinese men cannot grow facial hair, so they do not need it. And Mexican men can only grow mustaches. So cry me a fucking river.
Oh, wow. I'm exhausted.
I'm sweating.
I got to tell you, Gina, analyzing these matchups has been a real treat. And it's Agreed. Poetic that it comes down to a matchup of something so mundane as waiters and tipping versus a commentary on where our society is at. the toxic masculinity as. This is a real, you know, dichotomy of stances.
You're absolutely right. And to piggyback on that, they both become these two titans. And I got to tell you, the toxic masculinity, all the good points were hit. A few new ones were discovered. You know, I don't want to know how the plumber feels. I think that's a great point. The good vibes and taking it broader and saying, you're all about good vibes. What's happening in the country that manufactures those good vibes? That's a great question. But I got to tell you, through and through and through, waiters and tipping hit every note, from the condiments to forgetting the order when you're supposed to be a, you know, a Shakespearean trained actor, to the image of Adam digging under a condemned house with a coffee can. My heart still is being pulled toward waiters and tipping.
Yeah, the bringing it back to the personal, it really animated Adam at the end there. Maybe ended up with a bit of a whimper. However, the dubious science at the end of the Chinese man could not grow facial.
Look it up.
Yeah. Both strong.
I've heard of a Fu Manchu, but I don't want to get stuck in the mire.
Subject for another time.
I enjoyed the bringing in the stroke. As a stroke victim myself, Gina, I enjoyed bringing in the stroke victim to the waiters and tipping. I'm leaning towards waiters and tipping. I can't believe they're going to – something as mundane as waiters and tipping may make this whole thing.
And to anyone who didn't hear the March Madness and just sees the result, you got to go back and listen to how we got there.
Congratulations, waiters and tipping. The winner of the championship round of March Madness.
Not to get lost in the rants on toxic masculinity. Please keep using unwoke yourselves.
Yeah.
Oh, everyone's getting into
that. That was a great competition between you and you. Yeah. That was awesome.
You gave you all you can handle.
There's only winners.
Thank you. I'll go console myself in the locker room, at least the losing side. So we have Chris got on this, and we have the list of hot guys.
Oh, God. I spent way too much time Googling hot guys.
That's the staff. The staff is into.
I can't wait to enjoy this.
Yeah, because I want to know who males are into. The females, it's easy. Been there and done that. I want to know who the dudes are into, and I guess who the straight dudes are into. Oh. Speaking of hot guys, I was this close. You know, Sonny and I were trying to watch a movie last night. Like, we had this moment where I was standing in his doorway at like 9:15, and I was going, all right, what movie do you want to watch? He's like, I don't know, something good, you know. And then I went, I thought about it, and I was thinking about all these movies and movies he hasn't seen, and then I stumbled upon The Rock. And I said,
solid.
Oh, we need to see The Rock. With Kalen's dad, and he's like, oh,
yes.
He's like, it's a bad movie. I'm like, no. And he's like, it's a good bad movie. And I'm like, no, it's just a good movie.
It's
and you'll love it.
Better than it should have been. Like, right. That could have been a crappy movie, and it's actually pretty good.
Right. So then I basically made my case for The Rock. I got him sold on The Rock. I got pumped up on The Rock. And as I turned to walk down the hall to go down to the movie theater, Natalia came bursting into the house and announced that her and her friend had dibbed the movie theater for the night. And I said to Sonny, all right, well, you just bought yourself 24 hours on watching The Rock.
The Rock.
And he was like, good. And he's such a fucking snob. He went back in his room. But
have you showed him The Usual Suspects yet?
Yeah, we saw The Usual Suspect. We've seen a lot of good stuff, but it's
has he seen Heat?
I think he's seen a lot on his own, and he's seen some with me. But it's time to introduce him to the majesty that is The Rock. So that shall be.
I like the lack of toxic masculinity in your house. Mm. Natalia announces it, and you guys back off, and everything's right with the world.
I know who's in charge.
Yeah. Well, you want to. First off, trying to get...
I don't want to go up against Natalia.
Trying to get Natalia out of a theater, like a front seat that she's claimed in the name of Spain, is like trying to get a cougar into a burlap sack. I mean, good fucking luck. Like, you're going to get your cornea torn.
Yep. The one example I remember is she must have been 11, 10 maybe, and when we went to Vegas and the Winnebago, she had me holding my phone, about to call my program director to tell him I wasn't coming into work the next day because she wanted me to stay in Vegas. I was a half a second from pushing that because she is so convincing.
I know. And she'll do it. You know, she can, for you, she's got two modes. She'll sweetheart you to death, or the claws will come out. But either way,
it's the angel and the devil.
Yeah.
It's effective. So then I said, she said, I need the theater with my friend. And I was like, to watch TV? Because she watches TV in the theater. And she said no, but she could have been lying. And I said, because she said, go watch your movie upstairs, like in the living room. And I said, well, this is a movie. So if you're going to watch TV, watch the TV in the living room. Remember all these discussions you'd have as a youth with your parents?
Exactly.
Right. I've heard this a million times.
You watch it on the 95-inch TV that's in the living room instead of the 20-foot screen that's downstairs. But she just said, we're watching a movie. I was here's how you know. And by the way, I feel this way as a parent, and I feel this way as a California taxpayer. At a certain point, like 9:45, I did that move where I was in my office, and I was like, I'm going to go down there and see if she's watching a movie or not. And then I was like, oh, fuck it.
What does it matter?
Yeah, I'll just watch the rest of the Love Boat and call it a night. Yeah. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with all the hot dudes that the straight dudes at Corolla Digital are into right after this.